Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, January 3rd, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional state I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you like. There's also an app in the App Store, whether you use Google Play or the Apple App Store. You go there and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. It will give you access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments, questions, and or testimonials. And there are a whole host of audio files available of shows just like this one where people have done that. They've called in with comments or questions or testimonials, or they've been stepped through the worksheet process. And those are available for download. And if you listen to those, it can serve as a tutorial for how to use these tools to maximum effect to improve the quality of your life and relationships. If you have any comments, questions, answers, soliloquies for us, give us a call, 563-999-3581. Press 1 on the phone, and it will put an icon of a hand on by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. So how are you this year? How has the past couple of weeks been? I have been with family and friends and not on the show, so I was reviewing what we didn't finish in that final week of the year from the Course in Miracles lessons, and there were a couple things that sprang to mind. The last segment, the last week of the year in the Course in Miracles workbook is prefaced with some writing about final lessons. And I thought I'd review some of that. If nobody pops a hand up, Our final lessons for the week, the last week of the year, will be left with as few words as possible. And then, of course, there's five or six paragraphs of words. And then the next segment is simply that the next five lessons from 361 to 365 are simply this. This holy instant I would give to you, Creator. I want you to be in charge of my life, for I would follow you and your creation, that your direction gives me peace. I'm certain that your direction will give me peace. And if I need a word to help me, the Creator will give it to me. If I need a thought, this too he will also give. If I need but stillness and a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts I will receive from the Creator. The Creator is in charge by my request, and the Creator will hear and answer me, because creation speaks for all that is, and I am its offspring. We are inseparable. And the next section is the epilogue about how this course, this year's course, is not a beginning. It is a beginning and not an end. And again, there's a whole series of paragraphs full of words that just talk about trusting this process. And then if you go further in the Course in Miracles, it leads into the manual for teachers. So what we missed in that week in the Course in Miracles workbook lessons is not as detailed or poignant as the Course in Miracles experiment lessons with Pam Grout. And some of her comments might be useful here. Lesson 359 says, he is so optimistic that if his house is on fire, he roasts marshmallows. That's quoted from Aisha Taylor. Pam writes, the plane was about 20 minutes from landing in Las Vegas when the pilot came over the loudspeaker. Okay, folks, he said, it looks like high desert winds are going to prevent us from landing. We've been asked by air traffic control to circle the airport until the weather makes a shift. It's going to be bumpy, so please fasten your seatbelts. Sure enough, the plane started dipping and bumping and rocking like a mad bull. It got so bad that, well, you know those air sickness bags they put in the pocket with the airline magazines? The passenger in 16A used hers, which started a fad. People were exchanging worried looks and grabbing each other's hands and proving the old adage, quote, there are no atheists in foxholes, close quotes. Suddenly, from the back of the plane, there's a giggly, high-pitched, spirited, wee. The two-year-old in 28D had his hands in the air. He was having the time of his life. Every time the plane bucked, he'd celebrate with a full-throated, wee. He wasn't yet encumbered with fear. He hadn't yet learned to worry for his safety. He was fully present to the moment. Lesson 359 tells us to be more like the two-year-old in 28D. Rejoice, it says, that misery is replaced with joy, and that sin is merely a mistake. Lesson 360 says, been there, done that, no thanks. She quotes Terry Pratchett, who said, Nanny Ogg looked over her bed in case there was, looked under her bed in case there was a man there. Well, you never know what your luck might be. Pam writes, the world I see is old news, like already been chewed gum. Been there, done that, no thanks. The old reality is reductionist, judgmental, a know-it-all. My brain, specifically the prefrontal cortex, engineers reality. It crunches and tags data, it filters and constructs information according to the default programming that I have set up. This programming decides what to let in, what to suppress, and what to believe is possible. The higher, more subtle energy realms end up getting deleted, while the regularly scheduled programs, the sensations in our bodies, the nearby material things, these things get enhanced and they get directed to center stage. Today, I attend to the bigger, non-visible world. I put my faith in the new story, the inclusive, everyone belongs here story. Her lesson 361 is titled, Why I No Longer March in the Streets. She quotes Pharrell Williams, who says, turn your light on for those with no vision. Pam writes, I used to adore a good protest. I marched against war, against guns, against racism. Nothing's more exhilarating than carrying a sign and chanting in resistance with fellow comrades. But it finally dawned on me that being against something only adds energy to the reality I no longer want. It gives things I don't like more credit than they deserve. And it negates my power to create something better. Now, I prefer to be for things. I prefer to create better things. Things that make the old things obsolete. Remember dial telephones and black and white TVs, card catalogs and libraries? Nobody carried placards to protest these things. Rather, someone came up with a better vision. Fighting against something only makes it more real. Forgiving, also known as no longer resisting, makes room for new things to burst forth. It makes room for a new vision. There's still no shortage of things I'd like to change. It's just that now I go about it by using my true power to imagine new things. I use two very significant words, and those words are, what if? In 362, she titles it, Talking and Thinking Trash No More. She quotes The Way of Mastery, one of my favorite books, where it says, the bliss, the wisdom, the creativity, the laughter, the friendships, the joy, the serenity and peace that have been, for the most part, seen as an impossible dream, all of these will become your most ordinary state of being. Pam writes, talking trash was forbidden in my family. Even repeating the word but was grounds for the look, or worse, a spanking. What was allowed and perhaps even encouraged was thinking trash, as in, I probably shouldn't, I probably couldn't, I better not. This trash thinking creates a cloud of debris, like Pigpen from the Peanuts cartoon. And that debris blocks the universal flow. Lesson 362 assures me that, whether I'm aware of it or not, there's a part of my mind where stillness and peace can reign. I often fail to recognize the stillness and peace because my trash thinking clogs up the transmission. Unlike the cloud around Charlie Brown's friend, my energetic cloud is largely invisible. But it's just as effective at keeping the world's goodness locked out. It's why I attempt to keep my personal climate as pure and positive as possible. It's why I get up every morning and declare, something extraordinarily epic is going to happen to me today. It's why I meditate and actively look for blessings. Above all else, I choose to listen and affirm that Source really, really, really wants me to hear its, psst, hey you, as it whispers in my ear. Her lesson 363 reads, The Dude's Moccasins as a title, and she quotes Thomas Keating, who said, silence is God's first language. Everything else is a poor translation. Pam writes, you've probably heard the proverb, do not judge a man until you walk 2 moons or a mile in his moccasins. So today I'd like to give you a little taste of what it's like to walk in the dude's moccasins, or in creation's moccasins, or in God's moccasins. You say, I really want to travel. The dude says, awesome sauce. I'd love to set that up for you. Where do you want to go? And you say, well, maybe Paris. Or wait, no, I really want to go to the Caribbean. Except, no, I always wanted to learn to tango in Buenos Aires. But, not Buenos Aires, but, you know, wait, can I really afford any of that? These are the kinds of messages the dude gets all day, every day. On one hand, we want a new car. On the other hand, won't that mean higher payments? We hope for a positive outcome, but isn't optimism a bunch of baloney? We want to be committed to so-and-so. But what if she leaves? The reason we don't turn water into wine and heal illness with one touch is because our thoughts are scattered all over the place. Instead of being one constant, well-aimed tuning fork, our thoughts are like a junior high band of trumpet players. The force is literally bouncing off walls, going this way, no wait, go that way, no wait, it's knocking around like a lightning bug in a mason jar. This amazing, all-powerful force that works with the certainty of mathematics is being dissipated because we have no clear bead on what we really want. It's not that the dude isn't materializing your thoughts. It's just that you're thinking way too many completely opposite things. Her lesson 364 reads, titled, Gratitude, Please. She quotes Josh Radner saying, absolutely everything is available to us. Sorrow and joy, grievance and forgiveness, horror and transcendence. It's all on the menu. It's up to us where we put our attention. And Pam writes, tuning in to gratitude each morning is a piece of cake when life is humming. I'm healthy. I'm in love. There's scads of moolah in the bank. But the real mystical power of gratitude comes when I'm falling apart, stumbling in the dark, crying myself to sleep. A Course in Miracles suggests, quote, giving thanks in all circumstances, close quote. But it doesn't say I have to high-five my enemy when giving it. Sometimes it's all I can do to force through gritted teeth a sarcastic, quote, thanks a lot. Close quotes. But it's that daily litany of gratitude that enables me to drop back into alignment with my inner source of power, wisdom, strength, and love that, doggone it, is far greater than my own. Counting my blessings more than penciling a written list is to practice alchemy. Looking for the good in life physically changes things, financially changes things. It literally reconfigures atoms and rearranges molecules. Her last lesson is titled Epilogue 365. She quotes Rebecca Solnit, memory of joy and liberation can become a navigational tool, an identity, a gift. Pam writes, hip, hip, hooray, you made it across the finish line. You've completed 365 lessons. Either that or you've skipped ahead and that's okay too. Now that you're regularly hooking up with the voice in your head, the source from creation, you don't need me or this book or any other book to find answers. Now that you know the mind-blowing secret that you are connected to everyone and everything in the universe. Now that you know that, you can deploy this connection on a moment-by-moment basis. If you ask nicely, even sometimes when you don't, the Holy S will take the wheel from there. It will guide you and tell you exactly what to do in every situation. As for you and me, let me just offer thanks for joining me on this trek. I trust we'll all meet up again someday at some weird planetary soul convention. We will look back, slap our knees, and guffaw at all the preposterous things that we used to believe. That we were helpless and all alone, that we were manning the dials of this little orb hurtling through space. Silliness. But for now, it's time to go out and just do this thing. We'll do it fully with great aplomb, great love, and joy. And I will end this page from the calendar that was lovingly created for me, and now for you too, by my infinitely talented, amazingly awesome daughter, Tasma McKay Grout. And her daughter left her this large cursive writing, the word something, and then a list of descriptors. Something amazingly awesome, audaciously brilliant, captivatingly cosmic, deliciously delightful, extraordinarily epic, ferociously fantastic, gleefully glorious, hilariously historic, intrinsically illustrious, jubilantly joyful, keenly kinetic, luminously luscious, marvelously magnificent, notoriously noteworthy, outrageously over the top, profoundly perfect, quixotically quantum, ridiculously rip-roaring, stupendously stunning, totally tantalizing, undeniably unique, vibrantly victorious, wildly wondrous, expeditiously extraordinary, yabba-dabba dubiously yumnificent, zealously zen, is going to happen this year. And if you believe that, it probably will. So, as usual, we still have time to talk. We've got about 37 minutes left. Our number is 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and let us know your New Year's thoughts. We had somebody in the chat room, and they popped in briefly and said, welcome to the new year. We survived 2021, and then they left. So welcome to 2022. And here we have Susan. Welcome. Happy
Hi,
New Year.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Happy New Year. I was thinking about you this week, hoping it was a really good, fun, easy week. I kept thinking about how weird it must be for 11 o'clock your time to roll around and you think, oh, I'm not doing the radio show. I guess that was a question.
That only happened the first three or four days, and then I was able to just let it go.
Wow. Well, I have a couple of things to sort of respond to about what you were reading. And one, I don't know if you saw it. It's on Facebook. It's a post by Corinne Zupko saying, the title is 2021, the year I let go of A Course in Miracles, fell apart, and allowed myself to be rebuilt. And I do know in The Course in Miracles, at some point, and maybe more often than once, it says, put this book down. This book isn't it either. This is just a tool or whatever they say. This isn't it. And, you know, you probably do know that Corinne not only wrote the book From Anxiety to Love, but has been running A Course in Miracles study groups for a long time, and I was part of them for a long time, but they happened at night, at 8 o'clock at night, when even if I'm up, my brain is just not firing the way I would like it, and so I stopped. But I knew she was a wonderful group leader, had a lot of people follow. Well, I say a lot. Maybe 6 to 8 to 10 people on a call, and it was one of those interactive phone calls, a lot like the radio show. But I hadn't known that she did this, and I wondered if...
That she did what?
That she decided to not do the course, to stop doing the course, I mean using the book. And she wrote a blog, and I've only scanned it, but I wonder if you would like me to read it on here.
Well,
it's a blog,
what is your take from it? Is it uplifting? If so, go ahead and read. If it's a downer, we don't really need to add it to the system.
No. Okay, well, maybe I'll start with an uplifting story. It seems very superficial, but I took this as a true miracle and a sign of God's presence in whatever form God is, us, ourself, or something else. But it's about a glove that I lost. I had this pair of brown leather gloves that had a lining on the inside, and they were my favorite gloves. And they were getting pretty beaten up. And I was walking to church 3 weeks ago, and when I got to church, one of the leather outer parts was missing. And I went through the service and thought, well, I'll walk home, I'll retrace my steps. I'd like to find that glove. And I found myself saying a little prayer to St. Anthony in my days when my best friend was a Catholic. She told me, if you lose something, pray to St. Anthony. And I had already had an extraordinarily miraculous little incident where I lost something as a child, really lost it. It was a medal that my friend had given me, which I wore around my neck. And we ran a ballet school, and one day in the ballet school bathroom, I leaned over the sink to do something, and the medal fell down the drain. So that medal was gone. I didn't think about plumbers and so forth. I was a little kid. I was about 12, I guess. And I thought, oh, no, I've lost this, and I really love this. It's a little one of those Mary medals, the Immaculate Mary or whatever. So I said to my friend, I lost your medal that you gave me, or I lost the medal. And she said, oh, just pray to St. Anthony, and you'll get it back. And I said, that's impossible. It went down the drain. But I did say the prayer, and not a week later, I was riding in the car of another friend who had the identical medal on her dashboard, her mother's car's dashboard. I said, oh, that's just like the one I lost. And the mother said, oh, why don't you take it? Yeah, it's yours. And that seemed like a direct answer to that prayer. Well, so here I am. This is not a life-threatening or terrible thing, but I just thought, I hate thinking of that glove lost and my mateless glove, and it's my favorite glove. So, St. Anthony, if you got the time, you know. Well, I retraced my steps.
As though there is time in that realm. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, well, that's a whole discussion, right? So I'm walking home, retracing my steps, looking up, down, and sideways, didn't find it. Tim Bingham and I go for a walk in the afternoons. I said, today we're going to take the walk in the same, we're going to take the dog and let's retrace my steps. Good-natured fellow that he is, he said, sure. It's about a mile and a half to the church. So we walked, retraced the steps. Didn't find the glove. Retraced them back. Didn't find the glove. The following week, I went to church, walked the same route, looked and looked and looked, looked in little trash cans along the way. There are sometimes trash cans hitched to trees, or mostly trees, clamped to trees in our city, especially toward downtown. So I'm looking in those. Get all the way to church, do the service, of course, no glove, walk home, same route, looking in trash cans, looking side to side, no glove. So I gave it up. I said, okay, St. Anthony, I'm not going to throw away these gloves yet. There is still hope, but hope is waning. Are you going to get to work on this one or what? And I'm walking to church not thinking about the glove. Quiet, Dr. Tim. I hope this isn't boring or anything. I'm walking to church, not the same route. I decide to go my usual route this time. got almost to church, and I swear to God, a little voice said, look to the left. There was a little trash thing hitched to this tree, and right on top was my glove. Now, I can't tell you how cheered up I've been by this little event. The glove is just a sign. It's like God is weird, God has a sense of humor, or maybe this is a coincidence, and maybe it's both. I don't know what it is, but this is one of the happiest little holiday events of this year. It's just the little dally I had with St. Anthony and the glove. So Pam Grout comes to mind. The law of attraction comes to mind. What was all that? I have no idea. But things
well,
are
but
big
out
think
there. About it. Well, think about it in terms of looking for the blessing. Looking
yeah.
for the blessing. Always, every day, wherever I go, whatever I'm doing, I'm assuming that even though I won't be able to be grateful about everything that happens in my life, I will always be able to find something to be grateful for in every moment.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's nothing other than that I have the breath of life in me this moment.
Mm-hmm. I guess the thing about, and that's a good thing to remember, to always look that way. This was like a little reminder or to do just that, a little affirmation in the middle of a lot of things that are going on, and you know what all they are, just the current events and climate troubles and all that. This happened, and I'm going to hold on to it. I said to Tim Bingham, I'm never getting rid of these gloves again. These are like a holy relic to me. And of course, he thinks that's pretty funny. But anyway, that was one happy thing. Now why don't I read that some other time? I'll read the Zupco thing and see if it's the right sort of thing, because I only just read the titles and she mentions falling apart. Well, I'm sure she wouldn't mention falling apart without coming together before she wrote the blog. Knowing her, she found her way. But we're talking about ending things and spreading our wings and not doing the Course in Miracles. And for me and my son and my grandsons, two of them, I've been sending them the lesson every morning. And I wrote to them and said, what do you say? Do you want to stop? Because I've been reading the Course in Miracles for years and doing the lessons for years too, having taken them back up as of about 3 or 4 years ago. I decided this year I wouldn't do them. Maybe that won't hold. I don't know. But, and then I read that Pam Grout, Corinne was thinking of doing the same thing. I just thought, it's very interesting. What is this? Is this really a time to go even further? And maybe, I hope it'll be further. It isn't to say there isn't something to learn, but maybe it's in there now after all this time, only ready just to be applied. Time to be in direct dialogue, as Corinne said, direct dialogue with Jesus of God. To me, that's
well,
a
that
huge,
is the
wonderful
goal,
idea.
Right?
I mean,
that is the goal. And
mm-hmm.
however you want to get there, if it's useful to you to continue to do the lessons, keep doing the lessons. If you feel like you want to mm-hmm. switch it up and read the Way of Mastery this year instead, and do that. And you know, the way it's laid out, the Way of Mastery, if you read one lesson each month and just keep reading it, it'll take you 3 years to get through the Way of Mastery.
Wow.
And that's the way it was originally given.
Wow.
That's you know, those,
a great
those
idea.
People that were in on it for, you know, that the original channeling and received the audio tapes, they would receive a tape and then they would sit with it in whatever fashion they want it for a month, and a month later they'd get another one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way they went through, and originally when it started, they didn't know if there'd be more. They didn't know that there'd be more than one. They certainly mm-hmm. didn't know it would be one a month for almost 3 full years.
Wow.
But if you get something that's that deep and that rich, and you go back to it as often as you're called to for an entire month, you'll get a different level of benefit from it. It'll impact your life differently than if you just read it like it's a book.
Right. Well, that's a great idea. Can I ask you if you're planning to do any daily thing like the Miracles Lessons in the radio show for this year?
I had not planned that.
Okay.
So right now I'm open. I had thought about, well, maybe I'll, you know, read one of the Course in Miracles, I'm sorry, the Way of Mastery lessons, and then distill it and give some, or maybe I'll read a little section of it. But I hadn't settled on one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me is wide open to what audience we do have, what are they interested in?
Mm-hmm.
And being, you know, receptive, that's what I've been doing for the past probably 4 or 5 years in the support groups, is giving people a series of options and letting them choose as a group. What would you like to do tonight?
Hmm.
You know, the first umpteen years that I did the groups, it was just simply, well, we're going to listen to another or watch another of Michael Rice's videos. And after
mm-hmm.
about 10 years in it, I opened it up to introducing the Way of Mastery and some other things, Guy Finley, and then the Way of Mastery and the Way of Mastery Darshans and all that different stuff. And then I would just give people the choice. What would you like to do today? I don't know that we have that much active participation in the internet show, so we'll just see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I would like to weigh in and say, I know you've done the Way of Mastery before, but your suggestion about doing it again, I just pulled it out. I've got a bookshelf right near me. I'm going to do that. I do want something. And for years I did the Daily Office in the Episcopal lectionary, but I find those, for whatever reason, I'm just not open the way I'm open, have been open to miracles or the Way of Mastery or even A Course of Love, which on the second time through of A Course of Love, I got bogged down and I abandoned it. And that's another thing. It's staring at me right now, this book, and I think, what was it about that that I felt I just couldn't do it right then? But anyway, so I'll weigh in and say I'd love to do the Way of Mastery again if others would like it. And I'm open to any other kind of thing, too. It was fun to have Pam Grout and The Course in Miracles going parallel all year long.
Well, that was the brainchild of a radio listener and group member, Mary. And I hope it was useful to people. I think that at times when people are pushing against some of the language, double, triple negatives kinds of things that happen in the Way of in the Course in Miracles, it is less clear.
Yeah, hard going. Mm.
But if you take what, you know, Michael Rice said when they were doing the Kabur's manuscript work, Mm-hmm. They had the translators and they had a team, and they would get a section of the work from the Kabor's manuscript, and they would all go off on their own, and they would have the assignment to translate it. And then they'd get back together and talk about it. And it would only get included as part of the work if it met two things. Number one, it met the requirement that it was a valid translation from the ancient Aramaic into English. And number two, it fit right in line with this loving nature of all of the rest of the message from Yeshua. So, you know, there are a lot of things that have been attributed to Paul that would not that second requirement, because, you know, some of the writings that have been attributed to Paul are some of the most beautiful writings on love that you'll come up with. And then a whole bunch of others that come after that are basically kinds of rules or threats about doing what the church wants you to do. And it, you know, they're clearly, they don't have the same character and flavor as the what you might call the true Paul writings or the original Paul writings. So, you know, as anybody who's really dug into the biblical writings would tell you, there's a lot of mishmash that's gone into the canonical Bible. And, you know, when they held the council to decide, okay, what are we going to let stand and what are we going to leave out, and what, they did a lot of creative editing.
Right.
So that same kind of thing can be applied if you're looking at the Course in Miracles. If you just say, okay, I don't really get this, I don't know what this means, you can either do what Pam Grout suggests and RSO, rip that sucker out and just leave it and move on to something else, or you can say, what's the most loving way I can interpret this?
Right.
And then interpret it for yourself in the most loving way possible, and then read on with that absolute loving, all-inclusive, it's all going to be okay, every thought other than that is error kind of interpretation. So
that certainly is an acknowledgement about the creative. We are creators, and we are being invited to be creators when we read, rather than just take something as a pill, taking it as a pill. And I think that's exactly
we're being invited to be conscious of the fact that we're always creators.
We're not invited
to be creators. We were created as part of creation, and therefore we have that creative flow. Our mind energy is a creative force. So what we're invited to do is to wake up and be conscious of that fact and understand that wherever we point this thing that we call our thoughts, this mind energy, we're going to create more of whatever we pointed at.
Mm-hmm. But the way you just described the Aramaic scholars' approach to translating into English is like saying we are part of the creative process here. In order to really get the meaning of this, we may have to ditch some of the literal meanings that we think were intended at the time. The literal law part of it, for the spirit part of it, which may mean changing a word or something, because the word means something different now than it did then, for instance, to be a creative participant in the reading. Boy, that's exactly what I had stopped doing with the daily office. I had taken it as a pill every day.
Well, and, you know, for those people that study such things, and if you listen to people like Dale Allen Hoffman, he talks about how there's this story of the life of Yeshua, and he was born under a sign, and there were, you know, the three wise men, and there was the virgin birth, and there was the 12 disciples, and there was the water into wine, and the walking across water, and all of those miracles and that whole story that's attributed to Yeshua through the Christian / Catholic, Roman Catholic, etc. Through that timeline, that same story with all of those key elements, the virgin birth, the miracles, the 12 disciples, etc., was present hundreds and hundreds of years before Yeshua. And it was a story that was known to be metaphorical, to be mythological, to contain truths about an inner life in a story about, you know, each culture had their own God made man figure, and each culture had the same story of the 12 and the miracles and the lifeline. So it's meant to be instructional, not literal. So many of the stories of the Bible are not intended, were never intended, and the people way back when knew. So that, you know, in the Jewish tradition, it was common for them to rewrite the stories and to come up with new stories that followed the same, you know, storyline. But they understood this isn't literal. From, you know, the ancient Jewish line. And of course, that's what Catholicism and the Roman Catholics came out of, was the Jewish religious tradition, except they wanted to up the ante and get some control over it. So they said, no, this is literal. We know that over here you've got Osiris and Dionysus, and you've got these other gods in these other countries and these other man-made gods, but ours is the real one.
I had no idea about that myth.
That set of stories predates the story of Yeshua by hundreds and hundreds of years.
I didn't know that, Dr. Tim.
Across cultures, across continents, yes. And if you, you know, want to understand that more, you can read books like, you know, Timothy Freak, and or you can tap into Dale Allen Hoffman's work. He's researched it thoroughly. But, you know, it's there. It's in the written record. It's not, you don't have to make it up. You just have to be willing to look at resources that fall outside of any religious order. Like, if you go into, like, so many people say that they know about, you know, they know about Muhammad, and they know about Islam, and they know about, and But what they know about it only comes because they went into their Christian bookstore and bought some books about the enemy. And so you can imagine what their picture is going to look like. So there's a whole series of books by Timothy Freke, F-R-E-K-E, and Peter Gandy. Book titles are The Jesus Mysteries, Was the Original Jesus a Pagan God? That's one that will outline a lot of the stuff that I just mentioned. There's also one called The Jesus and the Lost Goddess, The Secret Teachings of the Original Christians. And there's one titled Wow. The Laughing Jesus, Religious Lies and Gnostic Wisdom.
Wow.
There's also The Hermetica, The Lost Wisdom of the Pharaohs by Timothy Freke and Peter Gandy.
How do you spell Freke?
F-R-E-K-E.
Oh, yeah, you said. Okay.
And he has, you know, a whole series of other books, but those are the ones where if you read those, you'll get a lot more detail out of, you know, than what I was just talking about. There's a funny one by Timothy Freke and Peter Gandy, The Gospel of the Second Coming. Jesus is back, and this time he's funny. And so it's kind of a satirical look at this dialogue where the truth of his life is being discussed. And I forget which disciple is there who believes it's all literal, and it's kind of a funny read. Anyway, the point is, you know, if you're looking at A Course in Miracles and you start to get bogged down in the language, don't get so literal about it. Or
right.
Put the filter on that says, okay, what's the most loving, positive, optimistic interpretation I can make of this that's in line with some of the other very directly stated loving messages that come from both the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery. You know, Pam Grout quoted the Way of Mastery in one of her last lessons. And I was just reading it earlier today as I was going through the summary. And it says, the bliss, the wisdom, the creativity, the laughter, the friendships, the joy, the serenity and peace that have been, for the most part, seen by you as an impossible dream, all of these will become your most ordinary state of being. Your most ordinary state of being will be bliss, wisdom, creativity, laughter, friendships, joy, serenity, and peace. When you quit fighting against what creation has provided. And, you know, I was thinking about it this morning as I was getting myself ready for getting back into the work week and, you know, long days, early mornings and late nights. And I started thinking about how the only way I create upset in my life is when I want things to be different than they are. Life is just unfolding. Life doesn't really care about my wants. And I create my anger, my fear, my frustration, my sadness, my sense of needing to get vengeance, my anger, my frustration. I create that only when I fight against life as it's unfolding.
What was it she said about something like memories of joy are a navigational tool? That was right in one of the last lessons, too.
From Pam Grout?
Yeah. I think so.
Well, it's not ringing a bell, but...
Okay. Something about a navigational tool. It's, I remember, and I've been using it, even though I can't remember what she said. I have the book, I could go look. Something about using memories of joy as a way to getting to the joy until it becomes such a habit that we're living in that state that you just said of peace and joy and love and friendships and community and whatever. Because we've all had, most of us, I hope, have had those experiences, but we haven't mined them enough, made use of them, and we can make use of them. She also said something.
Go ahead. She also said something.
She said something about, in all circumstances, be thankful. It reminded me of a fantastic prayer toward the end of the Book of Common Prayer in the Episcopal tradition, which is something like, at all places and in all times and at all places, give thanks to God in all things. She said something so similar in one of her last lessons too, and I was thinking, boy, that hits it right.
That hits it right where?
Right where we need it to be. Just gets, it's like providing a tool, a little lifeline, like a little rope. So no matter what's happening, to give thanks, which I don't do, of course, but working on it. Yeah,
well,
just a lot of good final things.
Well, and the thing is, you know, people think in terms of, I'll be grateful when I get what I want.
Right.
But backwards, right? The idea is to be grateful for what I already have.
Yeah.
Guy Finley says it this way. He says, you know, all this talk about manifesting and the law of attraction, and he said, I'll give you something to manifest that's worthwhile manifesting. Manifest a way to be happy with whatever you have right now.
Mm.
If you do that, that's something worth having.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way that you can cultivate this ability to be in the moment, in joy, in gratitude, and to be generating that energy, which is going to draw to you more of what you want. Michael Rice talks about how, you know, your wanter is in your heart. It's not in your head. It's not that conscious logical mind racing around from this thing to that, like Pam Grout was talking about, so many scattered thoughts at odds with each other. But the strength of the energy of the heart, of the emotions, the intensity of the energy of your emotions is far more powerful as a creative force in your life than the random thoughts that come and go.
So
I thank you for raising your hand and chatting. I realize we're down to less than a minute, so I will mute you and welcome to the 2022 year. Thanks for chatting.
Hi, you too.
All right.
Thanks, Dr.
Blessings. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Welcome back.
Thank you. Welcome to 2022.
Yay, thank you. Look forward to it being a better year.
Good. Well, you sound like you're in good voice and good health, so I'll wish you a wonderful show, and
thank you. We'll listen
in.
All right, thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, January the 3rd, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. Maybe raise a hand and let us know how your leaving of 2021 and your entry into 2022, how it went, and let us know what you were grateful for. How are you starting your new year? Give Michael just a moment to get dialed in. I'll invite you to go to our website, which is whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And just look around. There's lots of things that have changed. If you haven't downloaded the app, it's Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and it's free in either the Google Play Store or the Apple Store, either one. And this coming Saturday, January the 8th, is our next Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing. It's also, Michael will be in the Coptic Conference. Information on both of those is also on our website under events. It's also under schedule. So look at that. Let us know if you're interested. We're actually in the Smoky Mountains right now, and we had about 6 inches of snowfall last night. So I know that our granddaughter, Adeline, is going to be so excited because she wanted to go skiing. So we're waiting on them to arrive today. Michael J. and his family arrived 2 days ago. And I got here yesterday, so we're all just kind of straggling in. I see Michael's with us now, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here. It's theoretically at least a new year, the opportunity to create life anew, to move forward into something different if we're really willing and ready to do our work. And unfortunately, at this point, it seems like a lot of people aren't really wanting to look at, face, and deal with what's going on inside of them, and so keep the focus on the outer world. Our invitation with this work is to make a shift, is to move to a different place in life where we're willing to perhaps give up some of the desires of the mind and get back to the truth of who we are as human beings. And, you know, the false mind has a skill at building a case for anything that it chooses to engage in. And what we're looking to do is to get back to the real mind, to get back to the truth of who we are as human beings. And one of the difficult pieces of doing that is, well, actually, the song title that goes along with this particular set of thoughts, you might remember a few decades ago there was a song out there that said, "I can't get no satisfaction." And, of course, the world of music is definitely tends to be the world of excess and tends to leave people stuck in a cycle of addiction. And you look at the addiction that the entertainment world is so famous for. And yet, not understanding the difference, that the difference between satisfaction and satiation that song points to. You know, we can be satiated, and if we're satiated, it means we need more of what it is that we think we want. Well, wait a minute, Michael, if I'm satiated, why would that be? Well, it's interesting. What research is showing is that when we achieve a goal and get something that we want, we experience a temporary dopamine hit that feels like elation. And when we're stuck in that cycle, when dopamine is a thing, you know, we achieve a goal, you get a dopamine hit, achieve a goal, you get a dopamine hit. And that arena, as far as the mind goes, is an arena of diminishing returns. Because when we overload and overuse that dopamine, you know, let's say cocaine, the way people get high from cocaine is it causes the body to use up its dopamine supplies. You know, the happy powder is gone. And when those receptor sites are activated over and over and over again, the body automatically starts to pare off, to cut off those receptor sites, reduce the number that are there. And when the number of receptor sites are reduced, we need more of whatever it was that produced that high, that sensation that we can never get enough of. More, 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 more. Because it comes from that dopamine, but it's diminishing returns because the body shuts that down when we overload it. On the other hand, the real presence of joy comes from connectedness, not satiation. You know, one can find both joy and or sensation in, let's say, for instance, a relationship. One will tend to lead to a degrading, destructive relationship, satiation. Got to have more, can't get enough. You know, let's say it's in the arena of sex. Got to have more, can't get enough, want more, can't get enough. Receptor sites are paring down, takes more to get even the slightest hit, and it leads to addiction. On the other hand, exactly the same. It's got nothing to do with what's happening in the physical world. It's got to do with what's happening in the mind. All of the same events, I mean, second for second, minute for minute, the same events can happen in an intimate relationship. And if rather than satiation and looking for pleasure, which is the dopamine hit, the world of diminishing returns, if that's what one's looking for is pleasure, then the body's going to cut, shut down, and it takes more and more and more, and that is what leads to addiction. And of course, addiction means I have more goals. When I have more goals, I've got more stress, and my stress level goes up. I move from, you know, my normal personality into a power person dynamic, and I'll start to do the behaviors in order to try to get my quote-unquote needs fulfilled. I'll do the behaviors my power person did that I hated the most, and things become insane. Everything can be absolutely, if you were an observer, everything in the scene looks exactly the same, but if that sexual relationship comes from connectedness and the presence of love rather than sensation and satiation, then it leads to deepening aliveness, joy, and creativity because it works at different chemicals in the brain, they're showing. Instead of dopamine, which comes from that driving, I need a sensation, I need pleasure to be pleasured, wanting more and more and more of it, the hedonistic type of approach, exactly the same physical action, when it is connectedness in the presence of love in a relationship, creates that state of joy because it's now serotonin that's active in the brain. Totally and completely different process going on. And that becomes a relationship that leads to, instead of the downward spiral, leads to the upward spiral of aliveness, of joy, of creativity. So and you go back to the origins, you know, the original words in the book of John that were told, say, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. In Aramaic, it doesn't say that. It says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. And that desire out of some form of hostility or fear or need to get my needs met, greed, got to have more, leads to mind energy that creates this dopamine cycle, that creates a downward spiral. When it comes from abundance, from being, from the actual state of aliveness, the actual state of being and connectedness in relationship and service in relationship and willingness, that mind energy creates a serotonin loop that creates satisfaction, and it doesn't have to be a more driving type of process. And when you realize that the way to break the cycle when one's moving downward is through the use of forgiveness, that forgiveness is the key in changing this game, and that forgiveness weakens the patterns based in that dopamine cycle so that we can escape from that driving desire for something, which we could label as greed. You know, you look at the person who wants more money, more sex, more power, bigger houses, bigger cars, more thrills, you know, more danger. It's all based in that pleasure cycle that I think those young musicians were singing about so brilliantly and several decades ago of, I can't get no satisfaction, because when you're in a dopamine cycle, you can't be satisfied. It's just not possible. And when you realize that that desire for pleasure is driven by goals, and when one moves into an addictive cycle, into addiction, that addiction is always a cover for some sort of pain. Underlying it is a need that is produced by, I have to find a way to cover this pain. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to deal with this. And through forgiveness, one gets to feel and deal with those energetic patterns and put an end to the addictive cycle, an end to the insanity of addiction. And, of course, to just cover it very simply, the word forgive in Aramaic doesn't mean I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, but rather that forgiveness is the recognition that those perceptual constructs in my mind that show up as my behavior prompts are caused or put into action, recruited into action through my goals. And when I can cancel, in the Aramaic language, the word that's been translated as forgive is shebag. It literally means to cancel, to let loose, to untie. When I can cancel or untie my attachment to, I have to have this, 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 or that, then I can start to get out of that dopamine cycle where I want more of that hit of pleasure in order to cover my pain. Canceling of the goals that drive that process allow us to drop directly into our pain. Now, the average person says, well, why would I ever want to drop in directly into my pain? I don't want to feel that. Well, the way out of that dilemma is through. You have to sooner or later be willing to deal with the underlying patterns and the underlying pain that drives addictive behavior, embrace it in love, and move through it. And what that requires is a huge chunk of self-discipline. And you remember the word disciple means properly taught, not properly beat up. Yeah, they can do behavior modification and people will change their behavior, but none of the underlying dynamics have been embraced and healed. So one of the steps in the interim moving from pleasure seeking and addiction to fulfillment and satisfaction is that you've got to have enough self-discipline to stop doing what it is that you want to do once you realize that the behavior is not based in love. Takes a tremendous amount of self-will and self-control to say, I feel like doing this, but I'm not going to do it because I realize that it doesn't serve me and it doesn't serve those around me. And at the same time, when you step up to the plate into doing some sort of service, then that service is another way to move out of the state of hostility or fear, to move back to the truth of who we are. And the truth of who we are, if we embrace what's actual, is that a human being is literally made of the energy of love. And until one can deny themselves the satiation that covers the presence of love, they'll never touch into the satiation and heal it. So we have this satiation versus satisfaction. And it's satiation that's the root of greed. And to refrain from what you feel like doing, it's the most unnatural thing that there is. It's one of the most powerful acts of self-control that there is. And as you shave away, as you remove, when you know that word forgive in our modern language, properly applied, means to undo, to remove. And each time you forgive, you literally, energetically weaken the pattern of the driving underlying pain that causes addiction, just step by step by step by step. Each time you engage in forgiveness, I think this is what led them to ask Yeshua, you know, well, how many times do we need to forgive? How many times do we need to apply this forgiveness process? And they asked him, is 7 times enough? And in Aramaic, his answer was no, 77 times 70. That's how many times one is going to forgive. And each time you do, you drop into a little deeper level, heal a little deeper piece of what the underlying dynamic is that drives the need for satiation. And if one, and this is tends to be, in my observation, one of the most challenging things for people to do, oftentimes we'll see people that are driven to do this work when they're in pain, and as soon as their pain goes away, it's kind of part of that pleasure type thing. Well, now I've let go of my pain, so now I'm in relative pleasure. I don't need to do anything. One of the most challenging things to get people to do is to do their work when they're feeling good, rather than waiting till they're in the pit. You know, it's kind of akin to the reason why salespeople get paid so much. You say, wait a minute, how do you make a leap from salespeople being paid so much to what it is? How do you make that leap? Well, one of the reasons sales are one of the most highly paid professions is because salespeople need to produce. They need to sell. And what oftentimes happens, the people who fail at sales are the people who can't apply self-control. You know, one has a monthly target that they're supposed to reach in sales. And if they're not reaching that target, the tendency is to feel worse and worse and be in hostility and fear, be in seeking results, but not connected to a creative place in oneself. And so one goes out, the less they've met their quota for the month, the harder they drive to meet their quota, and the more they come from that hostility and fear place, and they tend to fail. And when they hit the high point, when they're feeling good and things are rocking, it's not human nature to say, well, now I'm going to go to work and do my job and do the sales that I need and get the sales target met for this month. you know, if the first 2 weeks of the month, you know, I'm feeling pretty good, you know, I'm rocking. Well, I can play. And the real salesperson, when they're feeling good, knows that's the time to go to work because they're in creative mode and they can produce those results. Where the person who is not going to make it in sales says, oh, man, I'm not making it. Push, push, push. I have to push harder. I have to produce the result. And they're working against their own best interest. So the similarity here is that when you're not up against the wall, that's the time to do the forgiveness work that you need to do. When it feels like you don't need it. That's the time when you're in a connected high place. That's when you can do the deepest levels of work. But many people, like the salesperson that's going to fail, wait until they're at the bottom of the pit and then say, well, now I need to climb my way out of the pit. Please, if you're going to take these tools and use them especially when you're feeling good, especially when you don't need to use them. Because that's when you'll get you'll be at the highest levels of empowerment, the highest levels of vitality, the highest levels of creativity, and that's when you'll be able to produce the healing result that you want. Instead of waiting until you're at the bottom of the pit and going, oh, I have this horrible thing going on in my life. I need to climb out of this hole. And I've just watched so many people over the years who become acquainted with this work. I remember talking to a man recently, and he was he'd been involved with his work for over 3 decades. And he'd come back every time he was in pain. He'd go, yeah, okay, I hear it. I got it. Yeah, I'll do it. And then would just disappear, not do his work, until he was against the next big crisis in his life. And he's like, well, yeah, now I need help. Now support me. Now I'm going to do my work. And sadly, in this gentleman's case, and I've seen it in too many other cases, he's at the point, after 30 years of dancing around it and not really engaging in it when he was on his game, he's dealing with some very serious physical symptoms, disease processes. He's like, yeah, now I want to do my work. Now I'm motivated, but motivated from the pit. It's not where you want to do your work. You want to do your work when you're at your highest, when you're at your most connected, when things are rocking and doing well. That's when to connect with other people who are rocking and doing well and do worksheets and move through those layers. And by the way, if you're not using the forgiveness worksheet process, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. And if you go to the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a link that says start here, and it'll walk you right through the whole forgiveness process. You can also print off the worksheets from the website. You can do them live, the worksheets live on the website, print your completed results off, and or you can go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. You're going to find the world's only forgiveness app, created by Miss Jeannie. Thank you for the brilliant work that you've done on that app, honey. I just this last iteration, I think, is just so exciting. The way it's laid out and the amount of information that's accessible to people, the utility of it, the fact that people can ask questions. I mean, it's awesome what you've created there. And it's such a profound gift to the world. So just go to your app store and type in Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word. Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Download the app. It's a purposely very, very private app. If you look, you'll notice that when you download it, it asks, like all apps do, for permission. And it only asks for one permission, and that is to be able to use the internet so it'll operate. Doesn't ask for permission to make phone calls or use your camera or send text or you know, access your contacts. Doesn't ask for any of those permissions that so many apps ask for. One thing, be able to use the internet. if you do a worksheet and you want to save it, which we suggest you do because they are gold, in the future there'll be new layers of healing available from virtually every worksheet that you do, new levels of insight when you go back and look at it with a different mindset. When you ask to save, or when you tell it to save a worksheet that you've done, it is going to ask for one more permission. That is the ability to write to your hard drive. Otherwise, there are no permissions required from the app. So you can rest assured, anything you want to put in it, you're the only one that will ever be able to see it. Put the app to work. There's a new feature that Jeannie put in this last iteration where you can just click a button. And if you have a question, you know, you're in step three and you go, well, I don't quite understand how this works. Click the button, write your question, hit send, and we will answer it on the next radio show and send you an email back saying, you know, at 2:12 on Tuesday the 12th, we answered your question. So you'll have access to that discussion. So download the app, put it to work, and if this is making sense to you, if this is working in your life, who do you know that doesn't have tools? You know, there's a section in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It's the life without tools. And the bottom line conclusion is that life without tools is hell. And life with tools and not using the tools is hell. It's what it ultimately leads to. And so download the app, put it to work. You can access meditations there. You can access videos, audios, schedules, you know, workshops. It's all in the app now. And so put it to work in your world, and we're here to create support. We'd love to hear what your experiences are. You know, how did using the app or how did using the worksheet impact you last year? And or what's on your agenda for this year? How can we support you? What's on your mind? Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our program, in our control panel, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel. Jeannie will know you want to talk to us, and we'll be having a conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, what's on your mind? How can we support you? Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet on this end. So someone press 1. We've got 31 minutes.
Half an hour for conversation. What's on your mind?
My hand just went up, I believe.
Oh, great.
It's Miss Susan, 610. You're on the air. Hi, guys. I wanted to hear a report of how your dad is, Jeannie, and how your trip is. And your brother's with your dad now, so you're free to be up or down or wherever you went. I forget where you went.
We headed over to the Smokies. We've had this vacation scheduled for months. And Michael got here Saturday, and his son, Michael J., got here on Saturday. And then I came yesterday on Sunday, and his daughter's going to arrive today. And
nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful. We woke up yesterday we were in short sleeves. Woke up this morning with 6 to 8 inches of snow on the ground. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Love it.
It was 70 degrees here yesterday.
Yeah. The kids are really excited about snow skiing. So that's awesome. Perfect week for it. And as far as Dad goes, no, my brother's not with him until towards the end of this week. But my son and stepson are taking turns going by there. But I spoke to the physical therapist this morning, and I told him, you know, that I felt like Dad had taken, you know, 4 steps backwards over the weekend. And he called me back after he had worked with him, and he agreed that Dad had declined. So I'm actually going to look at moving him to another facility, because I think they basically just left him laying all weekend because it was the holiday and there weren't therapists coming in or anything. And It just undid everything that they had done last week. So it's really brings up some frustration.
I bet. So you don't have to wait till you feel badly to do a worksheet. You're getting invitations. Oh, gee. Well, it's good to have a report. And you're both away and you're doing the radio show. This blows my mind, your loyalty to this show, no matter where you are. I could say come hell or high water, but that's not exactly.
Come heaven or high water.
Still. Okay, good. That's good. So, Michael, you said something really provocative. You said don't wait till you go down the tubes to do the worksheet.
Right.
And, of course, we probably all find it hard to crank up to do a worksheet when things are going well. Maybe other people are different, but I think, well, it's nice. I don't need one today, and I don't do them if I don't need them. And you're saying we got to do them like morning meditation. You do a worksheet or two.
You do a piece of work every day, and you're not going to have to get to the bottom of the pit. You know, it's kind of like you don't have to be sick to get better. And a lot of people wait till they're sick. And, of course, you know, if you're down at the bottom of the hill, it's a whole lot harder to push the truck up the hill than if from the top of the hill you started pushing and you know, made it through that dip.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, there's a cute story that I don't know, you may have heard me tell it before, but about motivation. It's about a guy who works at a factory, and between his house and the factory there's a graveyard. And he works night shift, but he's worked there so long and he knows the people in the graveyard and he knows the graveyard well. So, you know, he just crosses even though it's dark to work every night. And this one night he's on his way back, and unbeknownst to him, there's a fresh grave that's been dug, and he falls into the hole. And
oh,
it's so deep that he can't, you know, he struggles, he tries, he climbs the dirt, he's falling, and finally just decides, well, I'm going to go to sleep. I know the guys, you know, when the guys come in the morning, they'll get me out of here. So he curls up in the corner of the grave and falls asleep. Well, about an hour later, a drunk comes stumbling through the graveyard and falls into the same grave. And the guy wakes up and realizes there's somebody in the grave. He says, hey, buddy, now that you're in here, you can't get out. But the drunk did. It's called motivation. And you know,
I hadn't heard
we
that.
Don't have to be, we don't have to be in a pit to say, I think I'll do a piece of work. You know, I can be in just the same way. And I'm glad you put that thought out of meditation. Why do people meditate every day? I mean, gee, I feel good. Why should I meditate? Because it's a way of maintaining a state of higher level homeostasis. And in exactly the same way, if I'll do my work, whether I'm in the pit or I'm up on top of the world, I've got more vitality, I've got more power, I've got more an ability to reach into depth and clear things out than I do when I'm at the bottom of my vitality. And so, you know, it takes a certain level of awareness and intelligence and choice to say, all right, that makes sense. I'm going to discipline myself and just make this part of my routine the same way as I meditate every day. That's what I'm going to do, you know. And to me, when people get that, it just makes life a whole lot easier if they'll keep moving through the work and the process, you know. Okay, so I'm not feeling as upset about Bill over there, but I know I still have some upset about Bill, so I'm going to do a worksheet on Bill today, or what have you.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. You said something the other – oh, you've said many times that some issues don't come up for you until your vitality is cranked up enough that these issues – are now safe to be addressed.
Exactly.
Which is a little bit of a different angle. But Tim Bingham and I have been going for walks, and we often talk about what we're working on in our, you know, our personal growth department. And
right.
He had an issue that came up that hasn't been in his face since he was kind of forced to retire way back before we moved down to Pennsylvania. And one reason
right.
we came down here is because he felt so terribly about this whole city was the place where he had worked, and he was afraid of running into people on the street and having to explain himself and seeing familiar faces and feeling so badly about the end of his lawyerly career up there, which I won't go into, but
right.
all of a sudden he had a nightmare, which was similar to a nightmare he had the night before he resigned from his job up there, his lawyerly
right.
position up there. And I remembered what you said, and I said, maybe you're vital enough to be facing this now. Maybe you're strong enough from the work you've been doing. And he said, maybe, but he had a major question. And so I'm going to leak right over into the question, if it's okay with you.
Great. Absolutely.
Okay. And the question is, his dream had to do with hell opening up and really demonic evil coming into his awareness, into his presence, and he was terrified and woke up scared. He said, that's exactly like the dream I had, you know, however many years ago. It was probably
right.
almost 20 years ago. And he asked me, do you think evil exists apart from us? And, of course, that's a question we've been asking all along, but it seemed like a fresh, real question again. And
right.
my answer to him was, I like to act as if it's inside of me, because then it makes me responsible and in charge, and I can make choices. However, I don't know the answer to that, because with severe mental illness, for instance, whether caused by trauma or what, there is something demonic about certain kinds of mental illness where the person gets extremely ugly and destructive and dark. And I like to think that maybe they are possessed and there's something outside of them that could be exorcised in the old-fashioned sense of the word, and that they probably can't do it themselves. I guess I'm asking a question and a telling of all that, but I would love to know what you think about a separate evil. Does it exist?
Well, you know, one of the things that Yasha would say at this point is, that question's all Greek to me. So let's go back to the Aramaic mindset and see if we can adapt that, the Aramaic
okay.
mindset rather than the Greek mindset, and recognize, first of all, you know, you'll remember that the definition of sin in Aramaic, it's an archery term. When you fire at the target and you miss the bullseye, you're still on the
right.
target, but you miss the bullseye. The scorekeeper yells sin. And if you miss the target altogether, the scorekeeper would yell evil. Like,
mm-hmm.
you're way off in left field here, would be
mm-hmm.
evil. Now, what uh-huh. tends to happen when people program their minds with a lot of energetic patterns that are off the mark, off the target altogether, is that when those things are resonated into activity in them, and if they live in denial, you made me mad, you made me sad, you hurt me, then what my mind is going to do is take that evil energy in me, that energy that's off target totally in me, and build it into my brain's image of my object of attention, you. Then you show up as the demon in my life with all the evil that I'm feeling in my body. And, of course, if I'm
mm-hmm.
feeling it, it's got to be mine. And that's why the forgiveness process is so important, because when I personify that evil in my brain's image of Bill over there, when I take all the evil that's resonating in me, you know, I feel bad, I lost my job, I'm losing my prestige, people are going to think less of me. I take every energy that's off the mark, you know, I'm not worthy, people of authority like my father aren't going to value me. Then I take all of those energetic patterns unresolved in myself, and I literally project them into my brain's image of Bill, and now Bill becomes the personification of evil. I think we can do that with demons or devils or, you know, whatever game we want to play. And for me, where the forgiveness process understood from the Aramaic perspective becomes so important is that if I've taken that energy that is unconscious in me, that is so far off the mark as to be called in Aramaic evil, and I've made a picture of Bill out of them, I can collapse that picture, that lie that convinces me that Bill is making me feel this. And when I do that, I can bring love to that which is evil in me, which is off the mark in me, and I can heal that which is evil in me, and I'm going to be finished with it. Now, when in sleep, and as you're talking about vitality, you know, what I hear is 20 years ago when all this was going on, the resonance of that energetic pattern in him was so powerful that his unconscious was trying through dreams to communicate it with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it sounds like he wasn't ready, so what we're going to do is take the geographic cure instead of deal with this and go elsewhere. And I suspect that you're probably, you know, when I think back to that last still point breathing session and I remember the smile on Tim's face with what he resolved around one of the major rejections in his life with Dad, a new connectedness with Dad, to me, that would be a signal of a whole new level of vitality and probably the ability. So now, you know, he's got the vitality to handle it, and that energetic pattern is opening again through a dream communicating with him and giving him the opportunity to move through that, which, you know, what kind of messages, if you look at the messages he did not want to receive by staying in that town, there's some of the same messages that he's been processing with Dad, and he just recently came to resolution with some of that. So my take would be, I think you're right on track. He's at the next level of vitality. He's ready to do that next piece of work.
Good, and I'm with you on that, and I want to take a detour from that to ask you again about, for instance, you say you're working with Tim Bingham, who's a healthy man, basically, who has a willingness to grow and look
right
at things and do a worksheet. Now my question is, and it's the question of, is there a separate evil? I have a best friend whose daughter is bipolar. That's her diagnosis. She slips
right
into these absolutely snarling, she is like
vicious,
a devil, just nastiness.
Yep.
And there is no way she could be willing to do this work. And Jacob,
right,
my grandson, who is not that bad, still is not willing to do the work, and he's still in a blaming mode. And when he's really down, he affects his father, the power person. He becomes like his father, and his father to me seemed demonic, scarily
right
rage demonic. And so it leads me to thinking these guys aren't willing. Where isn't it demonic to not be willing, or what's happening that we can't get a handle on this, that we can't lead them to it? We just watch and wait.
Remember that feelings are reflections of thoughts. And if I have generations of mind energy, generations of thoughts, especially reinforced in childhood with a traumatic relationship with a power person, the primary resonating energy in my mind is that of sin and evil, literally, sin being energies that are off the mark, and evil being energies that are off target altogether. You know, like, you know, the child who says, I maybe verbally, directly got the message from my power person that I'm worthless and will never amount to anything, or maybe I just listened to the power person messages and came to the conclusion I'm worthless and will never amount to anything. That's evil. That's so far off the mark for a human being created out of love. And again, we can personalize it and personify it. And are there people whose minds are filled with that kind of energy? Generations and generations of, you know, hate and fear and rage and guilt and grief and self-condemnation and things like murder and crime and rape and pillage. You know, that's in the genes of a lot of people. Now, where I come to with that is, from a physics point of view, what I know is that nobody has ever created a flash dark. You know, we have a flashlight. The room is totally and completely dark. I push this little button and the room lights up.
Yeah.
But nobody's created a flash dark. That is a little device that you push the button and it evaporates all the light from the room, because darkness is an absence. In physics, darkness is an absence. It's not a positive presence. The question I hear you asking is there a positive presence called evil? And my offering, you know, demons, we down through history, we have a mythology of personalizing this and turning it into other people and into these demonic creatures, and people who are artists have created such horrific, you know, portrayals of these evil creatures. But is there a positive presence called evil? My take is absolutely not. There is an absence of the presence of love.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And the thought patterns and the power person patterns and the dynamics that come from the absence of active present love are horrendous. And what I've observed over the years is that people who you would say are demonic and evil, and I'll give you an example. Way back in Atlanta years ago, my partner, Dan McDougald, who was the head of judicial service agencies in Albany, Georgia, was working in the prison systems developing a course called Emotional Maturity Instruction. That became half of what together we created was the Laws of Living course. And he was working in the Atlanta prison system under the guidance of the head of the prison department, who ultimately became a judge in Albany, Georgia, named Asa D. Kelly, next thing to a saint. This man was amazing. And he was in the prison system working with these tools with prisoners. And there was one man in the prison who his thing, I mean, if there's a personification of evil, he was a serial killer. His thing was, I mean, he literally took joy from what Dan has shared with me in killing people, and was in prison for life for killing people, and had killed people in prison.
Wow.
And he watched Dan working with these prisoners and the recoveries that prisoners were making. Now, this guy is what the world would call pure evil. He literally enjoys killing people.
Mm-hmm.
There was a contract in that prison system put out on Dan. Guess who blocked and made sure the contract never came to fruition? This man that most people would consider to be pure evil. Now, my take is the light in Dan and the desire for Dan to support and assist people at the bottom of the ladder of our civilization resonated the light, the being, the truth in this man, and he stopped him from being murdered in the prison.
Wow.
To me, that would be an example of when, you know, and the line in the worksheet, you know, and this one goes back, this has been such a powerful thought in my work, in my life, goes all the way back to, oh, let's see, kids are now 42, so they were about 4 or 5. So 35, 36 years ago, we started a course in Unity Church in Delray Beach. It still goes on today. And the first lesson that we had in that course was, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. So to me, while someone might categorize this guy who enjoys murdering people and is in life prison, in prison for life for doing it, when Dan's light showed up, it turned the light on in this man, and he became his protector.
That is a fabulous story. And
good... everybody was terrified of him. Nobody would, when he said, no contract in this prison for Dan McDougald, that was it. Dan McDougald lived. Or he'd have probably been dead.
Oh, my God. That's so great. That's a great story. And that is perfectly applicable here. So
to continuously,
I love it.
You know, in the face of every disintegrated thought, every sinful and evil thought, every thought that's off the mark and or off the target in us, if I keep going back and choosing love once again, choosing love, you know, the Course talks about choose again, choose again, choose again. When I choose to bring it forward, there comes a point where it begins to or enhances the dissolution of that type web of disintegrative thoughts that blocks the light, and finally the light is able to come through.
That is a wonderful reminder. That's just perfect. Thanks.
Yeah, the inclination comes to share another story that ties in with this, and you've heard us speaking of in the past about a young man who was a military trainer. He was I don't know all the military terms, but his thing was teaching people to kill people. And when he first came to workshop, his wife brought him, dragged him kicking and screaming. And when he came into, it was actually a private home. We were doing a workshop in Fort Lauderdale. And they came early, and they were parked in the driveway, and somebody parked in front of him. And when I started to speak, he got up and walked out, got in the car. He was ready to leave, but he was blocked in. And at the intermission, I went out, and I said, hey, Michael, you know, what's happening? I thought you were going to be with us. And Michael shared with me afterward, does this guy Rice not know who I am? I could kill him with a flick of a finger. And that was, I mean, his big brag when we first got to know him was that, you know, as a military trainer, he trained people how to kill people, and he was a master at it.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael ended up teaching this work.
Great.
He got it. And, you know, and the light in him turned on, and he became a powerful advocate for forgiveness.
Wonderful.
So that's where that thought, you know, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. When I realize, and, you know, how deeply, how often, how long am I going to have to do it? Well, until the next time, and then until the next time, and then until the next time, and the next time. And when I make that my default setting, sooner or later, that energetic pattern is going to become strong enough in me that it will literally energetically touch someone else and bring that forward, rather than the hostility or fear that's moving in me touching the hostility or fear that's moving in them and drawing them to do their hostility and fear behaviors in response to my hostility and fear behaviors and doing a downward cycle. Somebody has to get big enough in a humanity where the atrocities are incalculable and unfathomable. Somebody's got to say, okay, well, I'm going to step out of that game, and I'm going to choose a different spiral. Because certainly, you know, everybody who's decided to be depressed about what's happening in the world could easily just buy into the depressed, oh, it's hopeless, it's helpless, look how terrible. And, you know, there's lots of terrible around to do that with. And when you realize that millions of people have been trapped in that, who's going to be clear enough? Who's going to be committed enough? Who's going to be strong enough to say, and I'm going to cause the spiral to go in a different direction until the critical mass of the spiral is upward rather than downward?
Fantastic. Well, that's the best pep talk ever. So I have a new resolve. Talk about a New Year's resolution. I hadn't made one, but this is a renewal. This is great.
Well, actually, the placement of your questions, I thank you for, because it's a renewal for me. It taps me in a different way as well to, yeah, this is what it's all about. This is why we're doing this.
It's so needed, and I have screwed up badly with my grand boy, Jacob. He was He's in Florida. He would call me a couple of times a day, and I was available to talk. And he went around and around and around, but he liked to talk, and I think in a way it helped. He's pre-doing the tools for sure. But
right.
I made the mistake of saying to him, Jacob, you know, you're an adult in a household where your mother is working very hard to support you with a full-time job, three boys, two of whom she's really, really worried about, and the third one she's concerned about too because he's virtually taking care of his father, functioning as his father's
right.
therapist. This is the youngest one. I said, Jake, would you ever want to live on your own? Because Tim and I could help you get on your feet, you know, if you wanted to get your own place. He immediately thought that I was getting ready to have him thrown out of the house. He panicked. Mm. And right on the phone, I said, he redefined, which I think is what gaslighting is, he redefined what I had said to him. He said, you're trying to throw me out. You're doing this. I said, no, 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 I'm not. But that was, I burned my bridge, Michael. It was not a wise thing. And he got off the phone. I haven't talked to him in days. He told his mother he thought he was going to be thrown out, which is what his father would do to the boys. He'd throw them out and wouldn't let them back. And they went to camps and they went to faraway schools and all kinds of things.
Right,
not
right.
as a benefit, but as a punishment. So I've burned a bridge with my grandson. And I'm thinking
well,
to myself.
Well, that's a thought. That's a thought.
Yeah, that is a thought. That's
did you
a good thought
did you burn a bridge
okay.
or did you open a door?
Well,
what I hear is you've opened a door to a conversation for him to look at a power person dynamic and the way that he listens. Because
mm-hmm.
what I hear you saying is his listening didn't tell him about anything you said.
Yeah.
And so to me, that sounds like an open door to, well, you know, Jacob, I noticed that you interpreted my speaking as ABC, I'm going to get you thrown out of the house, when the truth is, here's what I'm saying, and help him to build the brain cells for a different conversation. And I suspect that probably what you spoke was dealing with a power person dynamic that happened with his dad, and that's what you resonated.
Oh, yes.
That's his next level of healing.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and remember
that's true
the,
if I had
remember
access.
The, right? He won't take your calls?
No. I've written to him, and I've called him, and we do give him an allowance, but I don't want to use the allowance as leverage or punishment.
No. It's a good idea. I'm with you. Well, remember the thought in the course that speaks about words, and we're down to the last minute and a half, so I'm just going to speak through to the end of it and let the show disconnect. But remember the passage in the course that talks about, it would be strange if you were asked to take a teaching function and let go of the meanings of the words that the world uses, and then you were asked to use the words of the world. But the point that lesson makes is that you use the words of the world not because you believe they're true, but to prove their untruth in the language that the world listens in. And so my offering would be, and I will certainly join you and support you in, it sounds like here's an opportunity for you to interact with your grandson to assist him in recognizing how untrue his own thinking is. Now, of course, your creative genius is going to have to function there, but your creative genius is pretty awesome, so I suspect it will function well. Just defining what it is that you're about is going to be the next key to your guidance taking you there, I would say.
And there's further discussion needed, but there's no time. Thanks so much, Michael.
Great. Well, we've got tomorrow. Let's carry the conversation on. In the meantime, everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings.